Chapter 19 Continued.
Ron seemed to come to himself slightly as they walked back across the great hall. He touched the spot on his face where Hermione had kissed him, looking puzzled, as though he was not quite sure what had just happened. He seemed too distracted to notice much around him, but Harry cast a curious glance at the crown-shaped badges as they passed the Slytherin table. And this time he made out the words etched onto them. "Weasley is our king." With an unpleasant feeling that this could mean nothing good, he hurried Ron across the entrance hall, down the stone steps, and out into the icy air. The frosty grass crunched under their feet as they hurried down the sloping lawns towards the stadium. There was no wind at all, and the sky was a uniform pearly white, which meant that visibility would be good without the drawback of direct sunlight in the eyes. Harry pointed out these encouraging factors to Ron as they walked, but he was not sure that Ron was listening. Angelina had changed already and was talking to the rest of the team when they entered. Harry and Ron pulled on their robes. Ron attempted to do his up back to front for several minutes before Alicia took pity on him and went to help. Then sat down to listen to the pre-match talk, while the babble of voices outside grew steadily louder as the crowd came pouring out of the castle towards the pitch. "Okay, I've only just found out the final lineup for Slytherin," said Angelina, consulting a piece of parchment. "Last year's beaters, Derrick and Bowl, have left, but it looks as though Montague's replaced them with the usual gorillas, rather than anyone who can fly particularly well. They're two blokes called Crabbe and Goyle. I don't know much about them."
"We do," said Harry and Ron together.
"Well, they don't look bright enough to tell one end of a broom from the other," said Angelina, pocketing her parchment. "But then I was always surprised Derrick and Bowl managed to find their way onto the pitch without signposts."
"Crabbe and Goyle are in the same mould," Harry assured her. They could hear hundreds of footsteps mounting the banked benches of the spectators' stands. Some people were singing, though Harry could not make out the words. He was starting to feel nervous, but he knew his butterflies were as nothing compared to Ron's, who was clutching his stomach and staring straight ahead again, his jaw set and his complexion pale grey.
"It's time," said Angelina in a hushed voice, looking at her watch. "Come on, everyone. Good luck." The team rose, shouldered their brooms, and marched in single file out of the changing room and into the dazzling sunlight. A roar of sound greeted them, in which Harry could still hear singing, though it was muffled by the cheers and whistles. The Slytherin team was standing, waiting for them. They, too, were wearing those silver, crown-shaped badges. The new captain, Montague, was built along the same lines as Dudley Dursley, with massive forearms like hairy hams. Behind him lurked Crabbe and Goyle, almost as large, blinking stupidly in the sunlight, swinging their new beaters' bats. Malfoy stood to one side, the sunlight gleaming on his white blonde head. He caught Harry's eye and smirked, tapping the crown-shaped badge on his chest.
"Captains, shake hands!" ordered the referee, Madame Hooch,
as Angelina and Montague reached each other. Harry could tell that Montague was trying to crush Angelina's fingers, though she did not wince.
"Mount your brooms!"
Madame Hooch placed her whistle in her mouth and blew. The balls were released, and the 14 players shot upwards. Out of the corner of his eye, Harry saw Ron streak off towards the goal hoops. Harry zoomed higher, dodging a bludger, and set off on a wide lap of the pitch, gazing around for a glint of gold. On the other side of the stadium, Draco Malfoy was doing exactly the same.
"And it's Johnson! Johnson with the quaffle! What a player that girl is! I've been saying it for years, but she still won't go out with me! Jordan!"
yelled Professor McGonagall.
"Just a fun fact, Professor. Adds a bit of interest. And she's ducked Warrington. She's passed Montague. She's, ouch, been hit from behind by a bludger from Crabbe. Montague catches the quaffle. Montague heading back up the pitch. And nice bludger there from George Weasley. That's a bludger to the head for Montague. He drops the quaffle. Caught by Katie Bell. Katie Bell of Gryffindor reverse passes to Alicia Spinett and Spinett's away!
Lee Jordan's commentary rang through the stadium, and Harry listened as hard as he could through the wind whistling in his ears and the din of the crowd, all yelling and booing and singing.
Dodges Warrington, avoids a bludger, close call, Alicia, and the crowds are loving this. Just listen to them. What's that they're singing?
And as Lee paused to listen, the song rose loud and clear from the sea of green and silver in the Slytherin section of the stands.
Weasley cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. That's why Slytherins all sing, Weasley is our king. Weasley was born in a bin. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley will make sure we win. Weasley is our king.
And Alicia passes back to Angelina, Lee shouted, and as Harry swerved, his insides boiling at what he had just heard, he knew Lee was trying to drown out the words of the song.
Come on now, Angelina. Looks like she's got just the keeper to beat. She shoots. She... Oh!
Bletchley, the Slytherin keeper, had saved the goal. He threw the quaffle to Warrington, who sped off with it, zigzagging in between Alicia and Katie. The singing from below grew louder and louder as he drew nearer and nearer Ron.
Weasley is our king! Weasley is our king. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley is our king.
Harry could not help himself. Abandoning his search for the snitch, he turned his firebolt towards Ron, a lone figure at the far end of the pitch, hovering before the three goal hoops, while the massive Warrington pelted towards him.
And it's Warrington with the quaffle. Warrington heading for goal. He's out of bludger range with just a keeper ahead.
A great swell of song rose from the Slytherin stands below.
Weasley cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. So it's the first test for the new Gryffindor keeper, Weasley, brother of beaters Fred and George, and a promising new talent on the team. Come on, Ron!
But the scream of delight came from the Slytherin's end. Ron had dived wildly, his arms wide, and the quaffle had soared between them straight through Ron's central hoop.
"Slytherin score!" came Lee's voice amid the cheering and booing from the crowds below. "So that's 10-0 to Slytherin. Bad luck, Ron!"
The Slytherin sang even louder.
"Weasley was born in a bin. He always lets the quaffle in."
And Gryffindor back in possession, and it's Katie Bell tanking up the pitch, cried Lee valiantly, though the singing was now so deafening that he could hardly make himself heard above it.
Weasley will make sure we win. Weasley is our king.
Harry, what are you doing? Screamed Angelina, soaring past him to keep up with Katie.
Get going!
Harry realized he had been stationary in mid-air for over a minute, watching the progress of the match without sparing a thought for the whereabouts of the snitch. Horrified, he went into a dive and started circling the pitch again, staring around, trying to ignore the chorus now thundering through the stadium.
Weasley is our king! Weasley is our king!
There was no sign of the snitch anywhere he looked. Malfoy was still circling the stadium just as he was. They passed one another midway around the pitch, going in opposite directions, and Harry heard Malfoy singing loudly,
"Weasley was born in a bin."
"And it's Warrington again!" bellowed Lee,
"who passes to Pusey. Pusey's off past Spinett. Come on now, Angelina, you can take him. Turns out you can't, but nice bludger from Fred Weasley. I mean, George Weasley. Oh, who cares? One of them anyway. And Warrington drops the quaffle, and Katie Bell drops it too. So that's Montague with the quaffle. Slytherin captain Montague takes the quaffle and he's off up the pitch. Come on now, Gryffindor, block him!
Harry zoomed around the end of the stadium behind the Slytherin goal hoops, willing himself not to look at what was going on at Ron's end. As he sped past the Slytherin keeper, he heard Bletchley singing along with the crowd below.
Weasley cannot save a thing.
And Pusey's dodged Alicia again, and he's heading straight for goal. Stop it, Ron!
Harry did not have to look to see what had happened.
There was a terrible groan from the Gryffindor end, coupled with fresh screams and applause from the Slytherins. Looking down, Harry saw the pug-faced Pansy Parkinson right at the front of the stands, her back to the pitch, as she conducted the Slytherin supporters, who were roaring, "That's why Slytherins all sing! Weasley is our king!" But 20-0 was nothing. There was still time for Gryffindor to catch up, or catch the snitch. A few goals, and they would be in the lead as usual, Harry assured himself, bobbing and weaving through the other players in pursuit of something shiny that turned out to be Montague's watch strap. But Ron let in two more goals. There was an edge of panic in Harry's desire to find the snitch now. If he could just get it soon and finish the game quickly. "And Katie Bell of Gryffindor dodges Pusey, ducks Montague, nice swerve, Katie, and she throws to Johnson. Angelina Johnson takes the quaffle. She's past Warrington. She's heading for goal. Come on now, Angelina. Gryffindor score! It's 40-10, 40-10 to Slytherin, and Pusey has the quaffle." Harry could hear Luna's ludicrous lion hat roaring amidst the Gryffindor cheers and felt heartened. Only 30 points in it. That was nothing. They could pull back easily. Harry ducked a bludger that Crabbe had sent rocketing in his direction and resumed his frantic scouring of the pitch for the snitch, keeping one eye on Malfoy in case he showed signs of having spotted it. But Malfoy, like him, was continuing to soar around the stadium, searching fruitlessly. "Pusey throws to Warrington, Warrington to Montague, Montague back to Pusey, Johnson intervenes, Johnson takes the quaffle, Johnson to Bell, this looks good, I mean bad, Bell's hit by a bludger from Goyle of Slytherin, and it's Pusey in possession again. Weasley was born in a bin. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley will make sure we win." But Harry had seen it at last. The tiny, fluttering golden snitch was hovering feet from the ground at the Slytherin end of the pitch. He dived. In a matter of seconds, Malfoy was streaking out of the sky on Harry's left, a green and silver blur lying flat on his broom. The snitch skirted the foot of one of the goal hoops and scooted off towards the other side of the stands. Its change of direction suited Malfoy, who was nearer. Harry pulled his firebolt around. He and Malfoy were now neck and neck. Feet from the ground, Harry lifted his right hand from his broom, stretching towards the snitch. To his right, Malfoy's arm, extended too, was reaching, groping. It was over in two breathless, desperate, windswept seconds. Harry's fingers closed around the tiny, struggling ball. Malfoy's fingernails scrabbled the back of Harry's hand hopelessly. Harry pulled his broom upwards, holding the struggling ball in his hand, and the Gryffindor spectators screamed their approval. They were saved. It did not matter that Ron had let in those goals. Nobody would remember as long as Gryffindor had won. Wham! A bludger hit Harry squarely on the small of the back, and he flew forwards off his broom. Luckily, he was only 5 or 6 feet above the ground, having dived so low to catch the snitch, but he was winded all the same as he landed flat on his back on the frozen pitch. He heard Madame Hooch's shrill whistle, an uproar in the stands compounded of catcalls, angry yells and jeering, a thud, then Angelina's frantic voice. "Are you all right?" "Course I am," said Harry grimly, taking her hand and allowing her to pull him to his feet. Madame Hooch was zooming towards one of the Slytherin players above him, though he could not see who it was from this angle. "It was that thug Crabbe," said Angelina angrily. "He whacked the bludger at you the moment he saw you'd got the snitch. But we won, Harry, we won!" Harry heard a snort from behind him and turned around, still holding the snitch tightly in his hand. Draco Malfoy had landed close by. White-faced with fury, he was still managing to sneer. "Saved Weasley's neck, haven't you?" he said to Harry. "I've never seen a worse keeper. But then he was born in a bin. Did you like my lyrics, Potter?" Harry didn't answer. He turned away to meet the rest of the team, who were now landing one by one, yelling and punching the air in triumph, all except Ron, who had dismounted from his broom over by the goalposts and seemed to be making his way slowly back to the changing rooms, alone.
We wanted to write another couple of verses,
Malfoy called, as Katie and Alicia hugged Harry.
But we couldn't find rhymes for fat and ugly. We wanted to sing about his mother, see?
Talk about sour grapes, said Angelina, casting Malfoy a disgusted look.
We couldn't fit in useless loser either, for his father, you know.
Fred and George had realized what Malfoy was talking about. Halfway through shaking Harry's hand, they stiffened, looking round at Malfoy.
Leave it, said Angelina at once, taking Fred by the arm. Leave it, Fred. Let him yell. He's just sore he lost, the jumped-up little...
But you like the Weasleys, don't you, Potter? Said Malfoy, sneering. Spend holidays there and everything, don't you? Can't see how you stand the stink. But I suppose when you've been dragged up by muggles, even the Weasleys' hovel smells okay.
Harry grabbed hold of George. Meanwhile, it was taking the combined efforts of Angelina, Alicia and Katie to stop Fred leaping on Malfoy, who was laughing openly. Harry looked around for Madame Hooch, but she was still berating Crabbe for his illegal bludger attack.
"Or perhaps," said Malfoy, leering as he backed away, "you can remember what your mother's house stank like, Potter, and Weasley's pigsty reminds you of it."
Harry was not aware of releasing George. All he knew was that a second later both of them were sprinting towards Malfoy. He had completely forgotten that all the teachers were watching. All he wanted to do was cause Malfoy as much pain as possible. With no time to draw out his wand, he merely drew back the fist clutching the snitch and sank it as hard as he could into Malfoy's stomach.
"Harry! Harry! George! No!"
He could hear girls' voices screaming, Malfoy yelling, George swearing, a whistle blowing, and the bellowing of the crowd around him, but he did not care. Not until somebody in the vicinity yelled, "Impedimenta!" and he was knocked over backwards by the force of the spell, did he abandon the attempt to punch every inch of Malfoy he could reach.
"What do you think you're doing?"
screamed Madame Hooch as Harry leapt to his feet. It seemed to have been her who had hit him with the impediment jinx. She was holding her whistle in one hand and a wand in the other. Her broom lay abandoned several feet away. Malfoy was curled up on the ground, whimpering and moaning, his nose bloody. George was sporting a swollen lip. Fred was still being forcibly restrained by the three chasers. And Crabbe was cackling in the background.
"I've never seen behaviour like it. Back up to the castle, both of you, and straight to your head of house's office. Go, now!"
Harry and George marched off the pitch, both panting, neither saying a word to the other. The howling and jeering of the crowd grew fainter and fainter until they reached the entrance hall, where they could hear nothing except the sound of their own footsteps. Harry became aware that something was still struggling in his right hand, the knuckles of which he had bruised against Malfoy's jaw. Looking down, he saw the snitch's silver wings protruding from between his fingers, struggling for release. They had barely reached the door of Professor McGonagall's office when she came marching along the corridor behind them. She was wearing a Gryffindor scarf, but tore it from her throat with shaking hands as she strode towards them, looking livid.
"In!"
she said furiously, pointing to the door. Harry and George entered. She strode around behind her desk and faced them, quivering with rage as she threw the Gryffindor scarf aside onto the floor.
"Well?" she said.
"I have never seen such a disgraceful exhibition. 2-on-1. Explain yourselves."
"Malfoy provoked us," said Harry stiffly.
"Provoked you?"
shouted Professor McGonagall, slamming a fist onto her desk so that her tartan tin slid sideways off it and burst open, littering the floor with ginger newts.
"He'd just lost, hadn't he? Of course he wanted to provoke you. But what on earth he can have said that justified what you two—"
"He insulted my parents," snarled George, "and Harry's mother."
"But instead of leaving it to Madame Hooch to sort out, you two decided to give an exhibition of muggle duelling, did you?"
bellowed Professor McGonagall.
"Have you any idea what you've...
Him.
Harry and George both span round. Dolores Umbridge was standing in the doorway, wrapped in a green tweed cloak that greatly enhanced her resemblance to a giant toad, and was smiling in the horrible, sickly, ominous way that Harry had come to associate with imminent misery.
"May I help, Professor McGonagall?"
asked Professor Umbridge in her most poisonously sweet voice. Blood rushed into Professor McGonagall's face.
"Help?" she repeated in a constricted voice. "What do you mean, help?"
Professor Umbridge moved forwards into the office, still smiling her sickly smile.
"Why, I thought you might be grateful for a little extra authority."
Harry would not have been surprised to see sparks fly from Professor McGonagall's nostrils.
"You thought wrong," she said, turning her back on Umbridge. "Now, you two had better listen closely. I do not care what provocation Malfoy offered you. I do not care if he insulted every family member you possess. Your behaviour was disgusting, and I am giving each of you a week's worth of detentions. Do not look at me like that, Potter. You deserve it. And if either of you ever..."
Him.
Professor McGonagall closed her eyes as though praying for patience as she turned her face towards Professor Umbridge again.
"Yes?
I think they deserve rather more than detentions," said Umbridge, smiling still more broadly.
Professor McGonagall's eyes flew open.
"But unfortunately," she said,
with an attempt at a reciprocal smile that made her look as though she had lockjaw, "it is what I think that counts, as they are in my house, Dolores."
"Well, actually, Minerva," simpered Professor Umbridge, "I think you'll find that what I think does count. Now, where is it? Cornelius just sent it." "I mean..."
She gave a false little laugh as she rummaged in her handbag.
"The minister just sent it." "Ah, yes."
She had pulled out a piece of parchment, which she now unfurled, clearing her throat fussily before starting to read what it said.
"Ahem. Educational Decree number 25.
"Not another one!" exclaimed Professor McGonagall violently.
"Well, yes," said Umbridge, still smiling. "As a matter of fact, Minerva, it was you who made me see that we needed a further amendment. You remember how you overrode me when I was unwilling to allow the Gryffindor Quidditch team to reform? How you took the case to Dumbledore, who insisted that the team be allowed to play? Well, now, I couldn't have that. I contacted the minister at once, and he quite agreed with me that the High Inquisitor has to have the power to strip pupils of privileges, or she, that is to say, I, would have less authority than common teachers. And you see now, don't you, Minerva, how right I was in attempting to stop the Gryffindor team reforming? Dreadful tempers! Anyway, I was reading out our amendment. The High Inquisitor will henceforth have supreme authority over all punishments, sanctions, and removal of privileges pertaining to the students of Hogwarts, and the power to alter such punishments, sanctions, and removals of privileges as may have been ordered by other staff members. Signed, Cornelius Fudge, Minister for Magic, Order of Merlin First Class, etc., etc."
She rolled up the parchment and put it back into her handbag, still smiling.
"So, I really think I will have to ban these two from playing Quidditch ever again," she said, looking from Harry to George and back again.
Harry felt the snitch fluttering madly in his hand.
"Ban us," he said, and his voice sounded strangely distant, "from playing ever again?"
"Yes, Mr. Potter. I think a lifelong ban ought to do the trick," said Umbridge,
her smile widening still further as she watched him struggle to comprehend what she had said.
"You and Mr. Weasley here, and I think, to be safe, this young man's twin ought to be stopped too. If his teammates had not restrained him, I feel sure he would have attacked young Mr. Malfoy as well. I will want their broomsticks confiscated, of course. I shall keep them safely in my office to make sure there is no infringement of my ban." "But I am not unreasonable, Professor McGonagall," she continued, turning back to Professor McGonagall, who was now standing as still as though carved from ice, staring at her. "The rest of the team can continue playing. I saw no signs of violence from any of them. Well, good afternoon to you."
And with a look of the utmost satisfaction, Umbridge left the room, leaving a horrified silence in her wake.
"Banned," said Angelina in a hollow voice late that evening in the common room. "Banned? No seeker and no beaters. What on earth are we going to do?"
It did not feel as though they had won the match at all. Everywhere Harry looked, there were disconsolate and angry faces. The team themselves were slumped around the fire, all apart from Ron, who had not been seen since the end of the match.
"It's just so unfair," said Alicia numbly. "I mean, what about Crab and that bludger he hit after the whistle had been blown? Has she banned him?"
"No,"
said Ginny miserably. She and Hermione were sitting on either side of Harry.
"He just got lines. I heard Montague laughing about it at dinner." "And banning Fred when he didn't even do anything,"
said Alicia furiously, pummeling her knee with her fist. "It's not my fault I didn't," said Fred, with a very ugly look on his face. "I would have pounded the little scumbag to a pulp if you three hadn't been holding me back." Harry stared miserably at the dark window. Snow was falling. The snitch he had caught earlier was now zooming around and around the common room. People were watching its progress as though hypnotized, and Crookshanks was leaping from chair to chair, trying to catch it.
"I'm going to bed," said Angelina, getting slowly to her feet. "Maybe this will all turn out to have been a bad dream. Maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and find we haven't played yet."
She was soon followed by Alicia and Katie. Fred and George sloped off to bed some time later, glowering at everyone they passed, and Ginny went not long after that. Only Harry and Hermione were left beside the fire.
"Have you seen Ron?" Hermione asked in a low voice.
Harry shook his head.
"I think he's avoiding us," said Hermione. "Where do you think he—"
But at that precise moment there was a creaking sound behind them as the fat lady swung forwards and Ron came clambering through the portrait hole. He was very pale indeed, and there was snow in his hair. When he saw Harry and Hermione, he stopped dead in his tracks.
"Where have you been?" said Hermione anxiously, springing up.
"Walking," Ron mumbled. He was still wearing his Quidditch things.
"You look frozen," said Hermione. "Come and sit down."
Ron walked to the fireside and sank into the chair furthest from Harry's, not looking at him. The stolen snitch zoomed over their heads.
"I'm sorry," Ron mumbled, looking at his feet.
"What for?" said Harry.
"For thinking I can play Quidditch," said Ron. "I'm going to resign first thing tomorrow."
"If you resign," said Harry testily, "there'll only be three players left on the team."
And when Ron looked puzzled, he said, "I've been given a lifetime ban. So've Fred and George."
"What?"
Ron yelped. Hermione told him the full story. Harry could not bear to tell it again. When she had finished, Ron looked more anguished than ever.
"This is all my fault."
"You didn't make me punch Malfoy," said Harry angrily. "If I wasn't so terrible at Quidditch..." "It got nothing to do with that. It was that song that wound me up. It would have wound anybody up."
Hermione got up and walked to the window, away from the argument, watching the snow swirling down against the pane.
"Look, drop it, will you?" Harry burst out. "It's bad enough without you blaming yourself for everything."
Ron said nothing, but sat gazing miserably at the damp hem of his robes. After a while, he said in a dull voice, "This is the worst I've ever felt in my life."
"Join the club," said Harry bitterly.
"Well," said Hermione, her voice trembling slightly, "I can think of one thing that might cheer you both up."
"Oh, yeah," said Harry sceptically.
"Yeah," said Hermione, turning away from the pitch-black, snow-flecked window, a broad smile spreading across her face. "Hagrid's back."
Chapter 20 Hagrid's Tale. Harry sprinted up to the boys' dormitories to fetch the invisibility cloak and the marauder's map from his trunk. He was so quick that he and Ron were ready to leave at least 5 minutes before Hermione hurried back down from the girls' dormitories, wearing scarf, gloves, and one of her own knobbly elf hats.
"Well, it's cold out there," she said defensively, as Ron clicked his tongue impatiently.
They crept through the portrait hole and covered themselves hastily in the cloak. Ron had grown so much he now needed to crouch to prevent his feet showing. Then, moving slowly and cautiously, they proceeded down the many staircases, pausing at intervals to check on the map for signs of Filch or Mrs. Norris. They were lucky. They saw nobody but nearly headless Nick, who was gliding along, absent-mindedly humming something that sounded horribly like, "Weasley is our king." They crept across the entrance hall and out into the silent, snowy grounds. With a great leap of his heart, Harry saw little golden squares of light ahead and smoke coiling up from Hagrid's chimney. He set off at a quick march, the other two jostling and bumping along behind him. They crunched excitedly through the thickening snow until at last they reached the wooden front door. When Harry raised his fist and knocked 3 times, a dog started barking frantically inside.
"Hagrid, it's us!" Harry called through the keyhole.
"Should have known," said a gruff voice.
They beamed at each other under the cloak. They could tell by Hagrid's voice that he was pleased.
"Been home 3 seconds. Out the way, Fang! Out the way, you dozy dog!"
The bolt was drawn back, the door creaked open, and Hagrid's head appeared in the gap. Hermione screamed.
"Merlin's beard, keep it down,"
said Hagrid hastily, staring wildly over their heads.
"Under that cloak, are you? Well, get in, get in."
"I'm sorry,"
Hermione gasped, as the three of them squeezed past Hagrid into the house and pulled the cloak off themselves so he could see them.
"I just... oh, Hagrid."
"It's nothing, it's nothing,"
said Hagrid hastily, shutting the door behind them and hurrying to close all the curtains. But Hermione continued to gaze up at him in horror. Hagrid's hair was matted with congealed blood, and his left eye had been reduced to a puffy slit amid a mass of purple and black bruising. There were many cuts on his face and hands, some of them still bleeding, and he was moving gingerly, which made Harry suspect broken ribs. It was obvious that he had only just got home. A thick black travelling cloak lay over the back of a chair, and a haversack large enough to carry several small children leaned against the wall inside the door. Hagrid himself, twice the size of a normal man, was now limping over to the fire and placing a copper kettle over it.
"What happened to you?"
Harry demanded, while Fang danced around them all, trying to lick their faces.
"Told you! Nothing,"
said Hagrid firmly.
"Want a cuppa?"
"Come off it," said Ron. "You're in a right state."
"I'm telling you, I'm fine,"
said Hagrid, straightening up and turning to beam at them all, but wincing.
"Blimey, it's good to see you three again. Had good summers, did you?"
"Hagrid, you've been attacked," said Ron.
"For the last time, it's nothing,"
said Hagrid firmly.
"Would you say it was nothing if one of us turned up with a pound of mince instead of a face?" Ron demanded.
"You ought to go and see Madame Pomfrey, Hagrid,"
said Hermione anxiously. "Some of those cuts look nasty."
"I'm dealing with it, all right?"
said Hagrid repressively. He walked across to the enormous wooden table that stood in the middle of his cabin and twitched aside a tea towel that had been lying on it. Underneath was a raw, bloody, green-tinged steak, slightly larger than the average car tyre.
"You're not going to eat that, are you, Hagrid?" said Ron, leaning in for a closer look. "It looks poisonous." "It's supposed to look like that. It's dragon meat," Hagrid said, "and I didn't get it to eat."
He picked up the steak and slapped it over the left side of his face. Greenish blood trickled down into his beard as he gave a soft moan of satisfaction.
"That's better. It helps with the stinging, you know."
"So, are you going to tell us what's happened to you?" Harry asked.
"Can't, Harry. Top secret. More my job's worth to tell you that."
"Did the giants beat you up, Hagrid?" asked Hermione quietly. Hagrid's fingers slipped on the dragon steak, and it slid squelchily onto his chest.
"Giants?"
said Hagrid, catching the steak before it reached his belt and slapping it back over his face.
"Who said anything about giants? Who you been talking to? Who's told you what I've... Who said I've been... Eh?"
"We guessed," said Hermione apologetically.
"Oh, you did you?"
said Hagrid, fixing her sternly with the eye that was not hidden by the steak. "It was kind of obvious," said Ron. Harry nodded. Hagrid glared at them, then snorted, threw the steak back onto the table and strode over to the kettle, which was now whistling.
"Never known kids like you three for knowing more than you ought to," he muttered, splashing boiling water into three of his bucket-shaped mugs. "And I'm not complimenting you neither. Nosy, some would call it. Interfering."
But his beard twitched. "So you have been to look for giants," said Harry, grinning as he sat down at the table. Hagrid set tea in front of each of them, sat down, picked up his steak again, and slapped it back over his face.
"Yeah, all right," he grunted. "I have."
"And you found them?" said Hermione in a hushed voice.
"Well, they're not that difficult to find, to be honest," said Hagrid. "Pretty big, see?"
"Where are they?" said Ron.
"Mountains," said Hagrid unhelpfully.
"So why don't muggles..."
"They do," said Hagrid darkly. "Only their deaths are always put down to mountaineering accidents, aren't they?"
He adjusted the steak a little so that it covered the worst of the bruising.
"Come on, Hagrid, tell us what you've been up to," said Ron. "Tell us about being attacked by the giants, and Harry can tell you about being attacked by the Dementors."
Hagrid choked in his mug and dropped his steak at the same time. A large quantity of spit, tea and dragon blood was sprayed over the table as Hagrid coughed and spluttered, and the steak slid with a soft splat onto the floor.
"What do you mean, attacked by Dementors?"
growled Hagrid. "Didn't you know?" Hermione asked him, wide-eyed.
"I don't know anything that's been happening since I left. I was on a secret mission, wasn't I? Didn't want owls following me all over the place. Ruddy Dementors! You're not serious."
"Yeah, I am. They turned up in Little Whinging and attacked my cousin and me, and then the Ministry of Magic expelled me."
"What?"
"And I had to go to a hearing and everything. But tell us about the giants first."
"You were expelled?"
"Tell us about your summer, and I'll tell you about mine." Hagrid glared at him through his one open eye. Harry looked right back, an expression of innocent determination on his face.
"Oh, all right,"
Hagrid said in a resigned voice. He bent down and tugged the dragon steak out of Fang's mouth.
"Oh, Hagrid, don't. It's not hygiene,"
Hermione began, but Hagrid had already slapped the meat back over his swollen eye. He took another fortifying gulp of tea, then said,
"Well, we set off right after term ended."
"Madame Maxime went with you then?" Hermione interjected.
"Yeah, that's right,"
said Hagrid, and a softened expression appeared on the few inches of face that were not obscured by beard or green steak.
"Yeah, it was just the pair of us. And I tell you this, she's not afraid of roughing it, Olympe.
Heh, you know, she's a fine, well-dressed woman, and knowing where we was going, I wondered how she'd feel about clambering over boulders and sleeping in caves and that, but she never complained once.
You knew where you were going? Harry asked. You knew where the giants were?
Well, Dumbledore knew, and he told us, said Hagrid.
Are they hidden? Asked Ron. Is it a secret where they are?
Not really, said Hagrid, shaking his shaggy head. It's just that most wizards aren't bothered where they are, so long as it's a good long way away. But where they are's very difficult to get to, for humans anyway. So we needed Dumbledore's instructions. Took us about a month to get there.
A month? Said Ron, as though he had never heard of a journey lasting such a ridiculously long time. But why couldn't you just grab a portkey or something?
There was an odd expression in Hagrid's unobscured eye as he squinted at Ron. It was almost pitying.
"We're being watched, Ron," he said gruffly.
"What do you mean?"
"You don't understand," said Hagrid. "The Ministry's keeping an eye on Dumbledore and anyone they reckon's in league with him. And
we know about that," said Harry quickly, keen to hear the rest of Hagrid's story. "We know about the Ministry watching Dumbledore."
"So you couldn't use magic to get there?" asked Ron, looking thunderstruck. "You had to act like muggles all the way?"
"Well, not exactly all the way," said Hagrid cagily. "We just had to be careful, because Olymp and me, we stick out a bit."
Ron made a stifled noise somewhere between a snort and a sniff, and hastily took a gulp of tea.
"So we're not hard to follow. We was pretending we was going on holiday together. So we got into France, and we made like we was heading for where Olymp's school is, because we knew we was being tailed by someone from the Ministry. We had to go slow, because I'm not really supposed to use magic, and we knew the Ministry'd be looking for a reason to run us in. But we managed to give the Burke tailing us the slip round about Dijon."
"Oh, Dijon," said Hermione excitedly. "I've been there on holiday. Did you see—"
She fell silent at the look on Ron's face.
"We chanced a bit of magic after that, and it wasn't a bad journey. Ran into a couple of mad trolls on the Polish border, and I had a slight disagreement with a vampire in a pub in Minsk, but apart from that, couldn't have been smoother. And then we reached the place, and we started trekking up through the mountains, looking for signs of 'em. We had to lay off the magic once we got near 'em, partly because they don't like wizards, and we didn't want to put their backs up too soon. And partly because Dumbledore had warned us you-know-who was bound to be after the giants and all. Said it was odds on he'd sent a messenger off to him already. Told us to be very careful of drawing attention to ourselves as we got nearer, in case there was Death Eaters around."
Hagrid paused for a long draught of tea.
"Go on," said Harry urgently.
"Found him," said Hagrid baldly. "Went over a ridge one night, and there they was, spread out underneath us. Little fires burning below and huge shadows. It was like watching bits of the mountain moving."
"How big are they?" asked Ron in a hushed voice.
"About 20 feet, said Hagrid casually. "Some of the bigger ones might have been 25.
"And how many were there?" asked Harry.
"I reckon about 70 or 80, said Hagrid.
"Is that all?" said Hermione.
"Yeah," said Hagrid sadly. 80 left, and there was loads once. Must have been 100 different tribes from all over the world. But they've been dying out for ages. Wizards killed a few, of course, but mostly they killed each other, and now they're dying out faster than ever. They're not made to live bunched up together like that. Dumbledore says it's our fault. It was the wizards who forced them to go and made them live a good long way away from us. And they had no choice but to stick together for their own protection."
"So," said Harry, "you saw them, and then what?"
"Well, we waited till morning. Didn't want to go sneaking up on them in the dark, for our own safety," said Hagrid. "About 3 in the morning, they fell asleep, just where they was sitting. We didn't dare sleep. For one thing, we wanted to make sure none of them woke up and came up where we were. And for another, the snoring was unbelievable. Caused an avalanche near morning. Anyway, once it was light, we went down to see him."
"Just like that?" said Ron, looking awestruck. "You just walked right into a giant camp?"
"Well, Dumbledore told us how to do it,"
said Hagrid. "Give the Gurg gifts. Show some respect, you know."
"Give the what gifts?" asked Harry.
The Gurg means the chief."
"How could you tell which one was the Gurg?" asked Ron.
Hagrid grunted in amusement.
"Oh, no problem," he said. "He was the biggest, the ugliest, and the laziest. Sitting there waiting to be brought food by the others. Dead goats and such like. Name a carcass. I'd put him at 22, 23 feet, and the weight of a couple of bull elephants. Skin like rhino hide and all."
"And you just walked up to him?" said Hermione breathlessly.
"Well, down to him, where he was lying in the valley. They was in this dip between four pretty high mountains, see, beside a mountain lake, and Carcass was lying by the lake, roaring at the others to feed him and his wife. Olimp and I went down the mountainside."
"But didn't they try and kill you when they saw you?" asked Ron incredulously.
"It was definitely on some of their minds," said Hagrid, shrugging. "But we did what Dumbledore told us to do, which was to hold our gift up high and keep our eyes on the Gurg and ignore the others. So that's what we did. And the rest of them went quiet and watched us pass, and we got right up to Carcass's feet and we bowed and put our present down in front of him."
"What do you give a giant?" asked Ron eagerly. "Food?"
"Nah, he can get food all right for himself," said Hagrid. "We took him magic. Giants like magic, just don't like us using it against them. Anyway, that first day, we gave him a branch of Gubraithian fire."
Hermione said, "Wow," softly, but Harry and Ron both frowned in puzzlement.
"A branch of
everlasting fire," said Hermione irritably. "You ought to know that by now. Professor Flitwick's mentioned it at least twice in class."
"Well, anyway," said Hagrid quickly,
intervening before Ron could answer back,
"Dumbledore bewitched this branch to burn forevermore, which isn't something any wizard could do, and so I lies it down in the snow by Carcass's feet and says, 'A gift to the Gurg of the Giants from Albus Dumbledore, who sends his respectful greetings.'"
"And what did Carcass say?" asked Harry eagerly.
"Nothing," said Hagrid. "Didn't speak English."
"You're kidding."
"Didn't matter," said Hagrid imperturbably. "Dumbledore had warned us that might happen. Carcass knew enough to yell for a couple of giants who knew our lingo, and they translated for us."
"And did he like the present?" asked Ron.
"Oh, yeah. It went down a storm once they understood what it was," said Hagrid, turning his dragon steak over to press the cooler side to his swollen eye. "Very pleased. So then I said, 'Albus Dumbledore asks the Gurg to speak with his messenger when he returns tomorrow with another gift.'"
"Why couldn't you speak to them that day?" asked Hermione.
"Dumbledore wanted us to take it very slow," said Hagrid. "Let him see we kept our promises. We'll come back tomorrow with another present, and then we do come back with another present. Gives a good impression, see? And gives him time to test out the first present and find out it's a good one, and get him eager for more. In any case, giants like Carcass overload him with information, and they'll kill you just to simplify things." So we bowed out of the way and went off and found ourselves a nice little cave to spend that night in, and the following morning we went back, and this time we found Carcass sitting up, waiting for us, looking all eager.
"And you talked to him?"
"Oh, yeah. First we presented him with a nice battle helmet, goblin made and indestructible, you know, and then we sat down and we talked."
"What did he say?"
"Not much," said Hagrid. "Listen, mostly. But there were good signs. He'd heard of Dumbledore. Heard he'd argued against the killing of the last giants in Britain. Carcass seemed to be quite interested in what Dumbledore had to say. And a few of the others, especially the ones who had some English, they gathered round and listened too. We were hopeful when we left that day. Promised to come back next morning with another present. But that night, it all went wrong."
"What do you mean?" said Ron quickly.
"Well, like I say, they're not meant to live together, giants," said Hagrid sadly. "Not in big groups like that. They can't help themselves. They half kill each other every few weeks. The men fight each other and the women fight each other. The remnants of the old tribes fight each other. and that's even without squabbles over food and the best fires and sleeping spots. You'd think, seeing as how their whole race is about finish, they'd lay off each other. But
Hagrid sighed deeply.
That night, a fight broke out. We saw it from the mouth of our cave, looking down on the valley. Went on for hours. You wouldn't believe the noise. And when the sun came up, the snow was scarlet, and his head was lying at the bottom of the lake.
"Whose head?" gasped Hermione.
"Carcasses," said Hagrid heavily. "There was a new Gurg, Golgamath." He sighed deeply. "Well, we hadn't bargained on a new Gurg 2 days after we'd made friendly contact with the first one. We had a funny feeling Golgamath wouldn't be so keen to listen to us, but we had to try."
"You went to speak to him?" asked Ron incredulously. "After you'd watched him rip off another giant's head?"
"Of course we did," said Hagrid. "We hadn't got all that way to give up after 2 days. We went down with the next present we'd meant to give to Carcass. I knew it was no go before I'd opened my mouth. He was sitting there, wearing Carcass's helmet, leering at us as we got nearer. He's massive, one of the biggest ones there. Black hair, and matching teeth, and a necklace of bones. Human-looking bones, some of them. Well, I gave it a go, held out a great roll of dragon skin, and said, 'A gift for the Gurg of the Giants.' Next thing I knew, I was hanging upside down in the air by my feet. Two of his mates had grabbed me."
Hermione clapped her hands to her mouth.
"How did you get out of that?" asked Harry. "Wouldn't have done if a limp hadn't been there," said Hagrid. "She pulled out her wand and did some of the fastest spell work I've ever seen. Ruddy marvellous. Hit the two holding me right in the eyes with conjunctivitis curses, and they dropped me straight away. But we were in trouble then, because we'd used magic against them, and that's what giants hate about wizards. We had to leg it, and we knew there was no way we was going to be able to march back into the camp again."
"Blimey, Hagrid," said Ron quietly. "So how come it's taken you so long to get home if you were only there for 3 days?" asked Hermione.
"We didn't leave after 3 days," said Hagrid, looking outraged. "Dumbledore was relying on us."
"But you've just said there was no way you could go back."
"Not by daylight, we couldn't know. We just had to rethink a bit. Spent a couple of days lying low up in the cave and watching. And what we saw wasn't good."
"Did he rip off more heads?" asked Hermione, sounding squeamish.
"No," said Hagrid. "I wish he had."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean we soon found out he didn't object to all wizards, just us."
"Death Eaters?" said Harry quickly.
"Yep,"
said Hagrid darkly.
"Couple of 'em were visiting him every day, bringing gifts to the Gurg, and he wasn't dangling them upside down."
"How do you know they were Death Eaters?" said Ron.
"Because I recognised one of 'em," Hagrid growled. "McNair. Remember him? Bloke they sent to kill Buckbeak. Maniac he is. Likes killing as much as Golgamath. No wonder they were getting on so well."
"So McNair's persuaded the giants to join you-know-who?" said Hermione desperately.
"Hold your hippogriffs. I haven't finished my story yet,"
said Hagrid indignantly, who, considering he had not wanted to tell them anything in the first place, now seemed to be rather enjoying himself.
"Me and a limp talked it over, and we agreed. Just 'cause the Gurg looked like favouring you-know-who didn't mean all of 'em would. We had to try and persuade some of the others, the ones who hadn't wanted Golgamath as Gurg."
"How could you tell which ones they were?" asked Ron.
"Well, they were the ones being beaten to a pulp, weren't they?" said Hagrid patiently. "The ones with any sense were keeping out of Golgamath's way, hiding out in caves round the gully, just like we were. So we decided we'd go poking round the caves by night and see if we couldn't persuade a few of them."
"You went poking around dark caves looking for giants?" said Ron, with awed respect in his voice.
"Well, it wasn't the giants who worried us most," said Hagrid. "We were more concerned about the Death Eaters. Dumbledore had told us before we went not to tangle with them if we could avoid it, and the trouble was they knew we was around. Spec Golgamath told them about us. At night, when the giants were sleeping, and we wanted to be creeping into the caves, McNair and the other one were sneaking round the mountains looking for us. I was hard put to stop a limp jumping out at them, said Hagrid, the corners of his mouth lifting his wild beard. She was raring to attack him. She's something when she's roused a limp. Fiery, you know. Spect it's the French in her.
Hagrid gazed misty-eyed into the fire. Harry allowed him 30 seconds of reminiscence before clearing his throat loudly.
So, what happened? Did you ever get near any of the other giants?
What? Oh, yeah, we did, yeah. On the third night after Carcass was killed, we crept out of the cave we'd been hiding in and headed back down into the gully, keeping our eyes skinned for the Death Eaters. Got inside of a few of the caves, no go. Then, in about the sixth one, we found 3 giants hiding.
Cave must have been cramped, said Ron.
Wasn't room to swing a kneesel, said Hagrid.
Didn't they attack you when they saw you? Asked Hermione.
Probably would have done if they'd been in any condition, said Hagrid. But they was badly hurt, all 3 of them. Golgamath's lot had beaten them unconscious. They'd woken up and crawled into the nearest shelter they could find. Anyway, one of them had a bit of English, and he translated for the others. And what we had to say didn't seem to go down too badly, so we kept going back, visiting the wounded. I reckon we had about 6 or 7 of them convinced at one point.
6 or 7, said Ron eagerly. Well, that's not bad. Are they going to come over here and start fighting you-know-who with us?
But Hermione said, "What do you mean, at one point, Hagrid?" Hagrid looked at her sadly.
"Golgamath's lot raided the caves. The ones that survived didn't want no more to do with us after that."
"So there aren't any giants coming?" said Ron, looking disappointed.
"Nope," said Hagrid, heaving a deep sigh as he turned over his stake and applied the cooler side to his face. "But we did what we meant to do. We gave them Dumbledore's message, and some of them heard it, and I expect some of them will remember it. Just maybe them that don't want to stay around Golgamath will move out of the mountains, and there's got to be a chance they'll remember Dumbledore's friendly to him. Could be they'll come."
Snow was filling up the window now. Harry became aware that the knees of his robe were soaked through. Fang was drooling with his head in Harry's lap.
"Hagrid," said Hermione quietly after a while, was there any sign of... Did you hear anything about your mother while you were there?"
Hagrid's unobscured eye rested upon her, and Hermione looked rather scared.
"I'm sorry, I... forget it."
"Dead," Hagrid grunted. "Died years ago. They told me."
"Oh, I'm really sorry,"
said Hermione in a very small voice. Hagrid shrugged his massive shoulders.
"No need,"
he said shortly.
"Can't remember her much. Wasn't a great mother."
They were silent again. Hermione glanced nervously at Harry and Ron, plainly wanting them to speak.
"But you still haven't explained how you got in this state, Hagrid," Ron said, gesturing towards Hagrid's blood-stained face. "Or why you're back so late," said Harry. "Sirius says Madame Maxime got back ages ago."
"Who attacked you?" said Ron. "I haven't been attacked," said Hagrid emphatically. "I..."
But the rest of his words were drowned in a sudden outbreak of rapping on the door. Hermione gasped. Her mug slipped through her finger and smashed on the floor. Fang yelped. All 4 of them stared at the window beside the doorway. The shadow of somebody small and squat rippled across the thin curtain.
"It's her,"
Ron whispered.
"Get under here,"
Harry said quickly, seizing the invisibility cloak. He whirled it over himself and Hermione while Ron tore around the table and dived under the cloak as well. Huddled together, they backed away into a corner. Fang was barking madly at the door. Hagrid looked thoroughly confused.
"Hagrid! Hide our mugs!"
Hagrid seized Harry and Ron's mugs and shoved them under the cushion in Fang's basket. Fang was now leaping up at the door.
Hagrid pushed him out of the way with his foot and pulled it open. Professor Umbridge was standing in the doorway, wearing her green tweed cloak and a matching hat with ear flaps. Lips pursed, she leaned back so as to see Hagrid's face. She barely reached his navel.
"So,"
she said, slowly and loudly, as though speaking to somebody deaf,
"you're Hagrid, are you?"
Without waiting for an answer, she strolled into the room, her bulging eyes rolling in every direction.
"Get away,"
she snapped, waving her handbag at Fang, who had bounded up to her and was attempting to lick her face.
I don't want to be rude,"
said Hagrid, staring at her. "But who the ruddy hell are you?"
"My name is Dolores Umbridge."
Her eyes were sweeping the cabin. Twice they stared directly into the corner where Harry stood, sandwiched between Ron and Hermione.
"Dolores Umbridge?" Hagrid said, sounding thoroughly confused. "I thought you were one of them ministry. Don't you work with Fudge?"
"I was senior undersecretary to the minister, yes," said Umbridge, now pacing around the cabin, taking in every tiny detail within, from the haversack against the wall to the abandoned travelling cloak. "I am now the Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher."
"That's brave of you," said Hagrid. "There's not many who'd take that job any more."
"And Hogwarts High Inquisitor,"
said Umbridge, giving no sign that she had heard him.
"What's that?"
said Hagrid, frowning.
"Precisely what I was going to ask," said Umbridge, pointing at the broken shards of china on the floor that had been Hermione's mug.
"Oh," said Hagrid, with a most unhelpful glance towards the corner where Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood hidden.
"Oh, that was Fang. He broke a mug, so I had to use this one instead."
Hagrid pointed to the mug from which he had been drinking, one hand still clamped over the dragon steak pressed to his eye. Umbridge stood facing him now, taking in every detail of his appearance instead of the cabin's.
"I heard voices," she said quietly.
"I was talking to Fang," said Hagrid stoutly.
"And was he talking back to you?"
"Well, in a manner of speaking," said Hagrid, looking uncomfortable. "I sometimes say Fang's near enough human."
"There are three sets of footprints in the snow leading from the castle doors to your cabin," said Umbridge sleekly.
Hermione gasped. Harry clapped a hand over her mouth. Luckily, Fang was sniffing loudly around the hem of Professor Umbridge's robes, and she did not appear to have heard.
"Well, I only just got back,"
said Hagrid, waving an enormous hand at the haversack.
"Maybe someone came to call earlier and I missed him."
"There are no footsteps leading away from your cabin door."
"Well, I don't know why that'd be,"
said Hagrid, tugging nervously at his beard and again glancing towards the corner where Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood, as though asking for help. Umbridge wheeled round and strode the length of the cabin, looking around carefully. She bent and peered under the bed. She opened Hagrid's cupboards. She passed within 2 inches of where Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood pressed against the wall. Harry actually pulled in his stomach as she walked by. After looking carefully inside the enormous cauldron Hagrid used for cooking, she wheeled round again and said,
"What has happened to you? How did you sustain those injuries?"
Hagrid hastily removed the dragon steak from his face, which in Harry's opinion was a mistake, because the black and purple bruising all around his eye was now clearly visible, not to mention the large amount of fresh and congealed blood on his face.
"Oh, I had a bit of an accident," he said lamely.
"What sort of accident?"
I tripped."
"You tripped?" she repeated coolly.
"Yeah, that's right. Over a friend's broomstick. I don't fly myself. Well, look at the size of me. I don't reckon there's a broomstick that'd hold me. A friend of mine breeds Abraxan horses. I don't know if you've ever seen them. Big beasts. Winged, you know. I've had a bit of a ride on one of them, and it was..."
"Where have you been?" asked Umbridge, cutting coolly through Hagrid's babbling.
"Where have I
been?" "Yes," she said. "Term started 2 months ago. Another teacher has had to cover your classes. None of your colleagues has been able to give me any information as to your whereabouts. You left no address. Where have you been?"
There was a pause, in which Hagrid stared at her with his newly uncovered eye. Harry could almost hear his brain working furiously.
I've been away from me health," he said.
"For your health," said Professor Umbridge.
Her eyes travelled over Hagrid's discoloured and swollen face. Dragon blood dripped gently and silently onto his waistcoat.
"I see."
"Yeah," said Hagrid. "Bit of fresh air, you know."
"Yes. As gamekeeper, fresh air must be so difficult to come by," said Umbridge sweetly.
The small patch of Hagrid's face that was not black or purple flushed.
"Well, change of scene, you know."
"Mountain scenery?" said Umbridge swiftly.
She knows, Harry thought desperately.
"Mountains?" Hagrid repeated,
clearly thinking fast.
"No, south of France for me. Bit of sun and sea."
"Really?" said Umbridge. "You don't have much of a tan."
"Yeah, well, sensitive skin," said Hagrid, attempting an ingratiating smile.
Harry noticed that two of his teeth had been knocked out. Umbridge looked at him coldly. His smile faltered. Then she hoisted her handbag a little higher into the crook of her arm and said,
"I shall, of course, be informing the minister of your late return."
"Right,"
said Hagrid, nodding.
"You ought to know, too, that as High Inquisitor, it is my unfortunate but necessary duty to inspect my fellow teachers. So I dare say we shall meet again soon enough."
She turned sharply and marched back to the door.
"You're inspecting us?"
Hagrid echoed blankly, looking after her.
"Oh, yes,"
said Umbridge softly, looking back at him with her hand on the door-handle.
"The Ministry is determined to weed out unsatisfactory teachers, Hagrid. Good night."
She left, closing the door behind her with a snap. Harry made to pull off the invisibility cloak, but Hermione seized his wrist.
"Not yet,"
she breathed in his ear.
"She might not be gone yet."
Hagrid seemed to be thinking the same way. He stumped across the room and pulled back the curtain an inch or so.
"She's going back to the castle,"
he said in a low voice.
"Blimey, inspecting people, is she?"
"Yeah," said Harry, pulling off the cloak. "Trelawney's on probation already."
What sort of thing are you planning to do with us in class, Hagrid?" asked Hermione.
"Oh, don't you worry about that. I've got a great load of lessons planned,"
said Hagrid enthusiastically, scooping up his dragon steak from the table and slapping it over his eye again.
"I've been keeping a couple of creatures saved for your OWL year. You wait. There's something really special."
Special in what way?"
asked Hermione tentatively.
"I'm not saying," said Hagrid happily. "I don't want to spoil the surprise."
"Look, Hagrid," said Hermione urgently, dropping all pretense, "Professor Umbridge won't be at all happy if you bring anything to class that's too dangerous."
"Dangerous?"
said Hagrid, looking genially bemused.
"Don't be silly. I wouldn't give you anything dangerous. I mean, all right, they can look after themselves."
"Hagrid, you've got to pass Umbridge's inspection, and to do that it would really be better if she saw you teaching us how to look after Porlocks. How to tell the difference between knarls and hedgehogs. Stuff like that,"
said Hermione earnestly.
"But that's not very interesting, Hermione,"
said Hagrid.
"The stuff I've got's much more impressive. I've been bringing them on for years. I reckon I've got the only domestic herd in Britain."
"Hagrid, please," said Hermione, a note of real desperation in her voice. "Umbridge is looking for any excuse to get rid of teachers she thinks are too close to Dumbledore. Please, Hagrid, teach us something dull that's bound to come up in our OWL."
But Hagrid merely yawned widely and cast a one-eyed look of longing towards the vast bed in the corner.
"Listen, it's been a long day and it's late,"
he said, patting Hermione gently on the shoulder.
so that her knees gave way and she hit the floor with a thud.
"Oh, sorry."
He pulled her back up by the neck of her robes.
"Look, don't you go worrying about me. I promise you I've got really good stuff planned for your lessons now I'm back. Now, you lot had better get back up to the castle, and don't forget to wipe your footprints out behind you."
"I dunno if you got through to him," said Ron a short while later, when, having checked that the coast was clear, they walked back up to the castle through the thickening snow, leaving no trace behind them due to the obliteration charm Hermione was performing as they went.
"Then I'll go back again tomorrow," said Hermione determinedly. "I'll plan his lessons for him if I have to. I don't care if she throws out Trelawney, but she's not getting rid of Hagrid."